Chapter 29. Rest a few minutes, Timothy, said Eobright. I'll take your place. The grapnel was again lowered. Its smart impact upon the distant water reached their ears like a kiss, whereupon Eobright knelt down, and leaning over the well began dragging the grapnel round and round as Fairway had done. Tie a rope round him, it is dangerous, cried a soft, an anxious voice somewhere above them. Everybody turned. The speaker was a woman, gazing down upon the group from an upper window, whose panes blazed in the ruddy glare from the west. Her lips were parted, and she appeared for the moment to forget where she was. The rope was accordingly tied round his waist, and the work proceeded. At the next haul the weight was not heavy, and it was discovered that they had only secured a coil of the rope detached from the bucket. The tangled mass was thrown into the background. Humphrey took Eobright's place, and the grapnel was lowered again. Eobright retired to the heap of recovered rope in a meditative mood. Of the identity between the lady's voice and that of the melancholy mummer he had not a moment's doubt. How thoughtful of her, he said to himself. Eustacia, who had reddened when she perceived the effect of her exclamation upon the group below, was no longer to be seen at the window, though Eobright scanned it wistfully. While he stood there, the men at the well succeeded in getting up the bucket without a mishap. One of them went to inquire for the captain, to learn what orders he wished to give for mending the well tackle. The captain proved to be away from home, and Eustacia appeared at the door and came out. As he had lapsed into an easy and dignified calm, far removed from the intensity of life in her words of solicitude for Clem's safety. Will it be possible to draw water here tonight? She inquired. No, miss. The bottom of the bucket is clean knocked out. And as we can do no more now, we'll leave off and come again tomorrow morning. No water, she murmured, turning away. I can send you up some from Bloom's End, said Clem, coming forward and raising his hat as the men retired. Eobright and Eustacia looked at each other for one instant, as if each had in mind those few moments during which a certain moonlight scene was common to both. With a glance, the calm fixity of her features sublimed itself to an expression of refinement and warmth. It was like garish noon rising to the dignity of sunset in a couple of seconds. Thank you, it will hardly be necessary, she replied. But if you have no water? Well, it is what I call no water, she said, blushing, and lifting her long lashed eyelids, as if to lift them were a work requiring consideration. My grandfather calls it water enough. I'll show you what I mean. She moved away a few yards, and Clem followed. When she reached the corner of the enclosure, where the steps were formed for mounting the boundary bank, she sprang up with a lightness which seemed strange after her listless movement towards the well. It incidentally showed that her apparent languor did not arise from lack of force. Clem ascended behind her, and noticed a circular burnt patch at the top of the bank. Chess? He said. Yes, said Eustacia. He had a little bonfire here last 5th of November, and those are the marks of it. On that spot it stood the fire as he had kindled to attract wild of. That's the only kind of water we have, she continued, tossing a stone into the pool, which lay on the outside of the bank like the white of an eye without its pupil. The stone fell with a flounce, but no wild of appeared on the other side, as on a previous occasion there. My grandfather says he lived for more than 20 years at sea on water twice as bad as that, she went on, and considers it quite good enough for us here on an emergency. Well, as a matter of fact, there are no impurities in the water of these pools at this time of the year. It has only just rained into them. She shook her head. I'm managing to exist in a wilderness, but I cannot drink from a pond, she said. Clem looked towards the well, which was now deserted, the men having gone home. Tea is a long way to send for spring water, he said, after a silence. But since you don't like this in the pond, I'll try to get you some myself. He went back to the well. Yes, I think I could do it by tying on this pail. But, since I would not trouble the men to get it, I cannot in conscience let you. I don't mind the trouble at all. He made fast the pail to the long coil of rope, put it over the wheel, and allowed it to descend, by letting the rope slip through his hands. Before it had gone far, however, he checked it. I must make fast the end first, or we may lose the whole, he said to Eustacia, who had drawn near. Hold you hold this a moment, while I do it, or shall I call your servant? I can hold it, said Eustacia, and he placed the rope in her hands, going then to search for the end. I suppose I may let it slip down, she inquired. I would advise you not to let it go far, said Klim. It will get much heavier, you will find. However, Eustacia had begun to pay out. While he was tying, she cried, I cannot stop it. Klim ran to her side, and found he could only check the rope by twisting the loose part round the upright post, when it stopped with a jerk. Has it hurt you? Yes, she replied. Very much? No, I think not. She opened her hands. One of them was bleeding, the rope had dragged off the skin. Eustacia wrapped it in her handkerchief. You should have let go, said Eobright. I didn't you? You said I was to hold on. This is the second time I have been wounded today. Ah, yes, I have heard of it. I blush for my native Egdon. Was it a serious injury you received in church, Miss Vi? There was such an abundance of sympathy in Klim's tone that Eustacia slowly drew up her sleeve and disclosed her round white arm. A bright red spot appeared on its smooth surface, like a ruby on Parian marble. There it is, she said, putting her finger against the spot. It was dastardly of the woman, said Klim. Ill not Captain Vi get her punished? He is gone from home on that very business. I did not know that I had such a magic reputation. And you fainted? Said Klim, looking at the scarlet little puncture, as if he would like to kiss it, and make it well. Yes, it frightened me. I had not been to church for a long time. And now I shall not go again forever so long, perhaps never. I cannot face their eyes after this. Don't you think it dreadfully humiliating? I wished I was dead for hours after, but I don't mind now. I have come to clean away these cobwebs, said Eobright. Would you like to help me by high-class teaching? We might benefit them much. I don't quite feel anxious to. I have not much love for my fellow creatures. Sometimes I quite hate them. Still, I think that, if you were to hear my scheme, you might take an interest in it. There is no use in hating people. If you hate anything, you should hate what produced them. Do you mean nature? I hate her already. But I shall be glad to hear your scheme at any time. The situation had now worked itself out, and the next natural thing was for them to part. Klim knew this well enough, and Eustacia made a move of conclusion. Yet he looked at her, as if he had one word more to say. Perhaps if he had not lived in Paris it would never have been uttered. We have met before, he said, regarding her with rather more interest than was necessary. I do not own it, said Eustacia, with a repressed, still look. But I may think what I like. Yes. You are lonely here. I cannot endure the heath, except in its purple season. The heath is a cruel taskmaster to me. Can you say so? He asked. Oh, my mind, it is most exhilarating, and strengthening, and soothing. I would rather live on these hills than anywhere else in the world. It is well enough for artists, but I never would learn to draw. And there is a very curious druidical stone just out there. He threw a pebble in the direction signified. Oh, you often go to see it? I was not even aware there existed any such curious druidical stone. I am aware that there are boulevards in Paris. Eobright looked thoughtfully on the ground. That means much, he said. It does indeed, said Eustacia. I remember when I had the same longing for town bustle. 5 years of a great city would be a perfect cure for that. Heaven send me such a cure. Now, Mr. Eobright, I will go indoors and plaster my wounded hand. they separated, and Nastasia vanished in the increasing shade. She seemed full of many things. Her past was a blank, her life had begun. The effect upon Klim of this meeting he did not fully discover till some time after. During his walk home, his most intelligible sensation was that his scheme had somehow become glorified. A beautiful woman had been intertwined with it. On reaching the house, he went up to the room which was to be made his study, and occupied himself during the evening in unpacking his books from the boxes and arranging them on shelves. From another box he drew a lamp and a can of oil. He trimmed the lamp, arranged his table, and said, "Now, I am ready to begin." He rose early the next morning, read 2 hours before breakfast by the light of his lamp, read all the morning, all the afternoon. Just when the sun was going down, his eyes felt weary, and he leant back in his chair. His room overlooked the front of the premises, and the valley of the heath beyond. The lowest beams of the winter sun threw the shadow of the house over the palings, across the grass margin of the heath, and far up the vale, where the chimney outlines and those of the surrounding treetops stretched forth in long dark prongs. Having been seated at work all day, he decided to take a turn upon the hills before it got dark, and, going out forthwith, he struck across the heath towards Mistover. It was an hour and a half later when he again appeared at the garden gate. The shutters of the house were closed, and Christian Cantle, who had been wheeling manure about the garden all day, had gone home. On entering, he found that his mother, after waiting a long time for him, had finished her meal. "Where have you been, Klim?" she immediately said. "Why didn't you tell me that you were going away at this time?" "I have been on the heath." "You'll meet Nastasia Vi if you go up there." Klim paused a minute. "Yes, I met her this evening," he said, as though it were spoken under the sheer necessity of preserving honesty. "I wondered if you had." "It was no appointment." "No, such meetings never are." "But you are not angry, mother?" "I can hardly say that I am not." "Angry? No. But when I consider the usual nature of the drag which causes men of promise to disappoint the world, I feel uneasy." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.